I went to my monthly Maine minister meeting last Wednesday. It's for all of the ministers, the UU ministers in northern Maine. There were 9 of us, I think, that drove the long trek to Holton. We do this every November. We share space, and once a year, we go to Holton because of the beloved minister there. He's been the minister there for 23 years. David Hutchinson always makes the trek down every month to be with us. Now, I don't know if any of you have visited the Holton Church. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful. It's old and has huge dark beams, has a little parlor with a fireplace where they hold their services in the winter because they still refuse to heat the sanctuary. They also run in the basement the Cup Cafe. It's a quirky little coffee shop with a full espresso cappuccino latte bar, and Dave made us pumpkin spice steamers for our dessert after lunch. You might remember that the weekend of the eclipse was a big time for Northern Maine and for Holton, and the UU church there hosted a weekend full of events, live music, tarot readings, yoga classes, and so much more, only to find that most people didn't come or chose to stay in their hotel rooms until the eclipse occurred. They have a small but mighty congregation that is absolutely committed to bringing people in. And on Wednesday, when we were there, we heard about how they just finished hosting a Comic-Con event, complete with costumes, presenters, and props. Reverend David was a longtime Star Wars fanatic, and he was able to show off his life-size real lightsaber and Jedi robe. In fact, the worship that he offered to his colleagues that morning was entirely Star Wars themed. Have I mentioned how much I love Unitarian Universalism? As much as I love Dave and Star Wars, in fact, there was something about this particular time and this particular theme that ended up making me feel really uncomfortable. I had just been working with that Clint Smith poem that you all just heard. I was working with it on Tuesday, doing my worship prep, and I found myself once again really distraught by the idea of finding hope in a violent resistance and in a handful of people who would somehow save us. Clint Smith wrote, "We've grown accustomed to the lifetime aphorisms meant to assuage fears, pithy sayings meant to convey that everything will end up fine in the end. But there's no solace in rearranging language to make a different word tell the same lie. Sometimes the moral arc of the universe does not bend in a direction that comforts us. Sometimes it bends in ways we don't expect, and there are people who fall off in the process. That's why we need a new way, a new path of hope and healing." In that worship service, Dave asked us which character we might imagine ourselves to be in this moment. Now, you'd think as a minister and a UU minister, no less, I'd want to be an Obi-Wan Kenobi or Leia or, dare I say, Yoda. But I don't see myself in those characters, if I'm completely honest. I feel like maybe I'm Luke's adoptive parents. Or maybe I'm the bookseller in one of those port towns that Han Solo stops in. Maybe I'm a bartender who listens to all of the problems and all of the gossip around the galaxy and knows everyone's names. Maybe I'm a teacher. Maybe I'm a small town minister who loves to help people through the big moments of their lives, births and deaths and weddings, funerals and all of the changes in between. Maybe I play piano and read fantasy novels and love to have my daughter's friends over. What character would you be? Maybe you'll grow vegetables or take care of trees. Maybe you'll do accounting work at a small firm or provide legal support to folks in need. So often, it's all of these seemingly average, not flashy enough to make it on the big screen folks who become the ghosts before the dust settles. Even if the good folks win, I might argue that the best folks were seen as expendable collateral damage. And then we start the cycle all over again. I just know so deeply that this is what I don't want to be a part of anymore. I don't want to participate in being a chess piece in someone else's destructive power game. And please hear me say, I know there are things worth fighting and dying for. I know that there are courageous souls who have given their whole lives to move that needle just a little bit more forward throughout the course of human history, and I honor them. I also think that our humanity's attachment to the savior theory of existence is really problematic. The binary of good people and bad people keeps a cycle of devaluing life in continual motion. And I just want us to be sure that what we're doing is real, effective, and helpful, in line with our values and providing the most relief. And here's a little caveat. Do you know that there's a thing called the paradox of tolerance? There is. Wikipedia will tell you all about it. The paradox of tolerance says that if you're too tolerant, if you're tolerant of the intolerant, intolerance will win. That is not what we want to have happen. I want us to be sure that when we are angry about, I want us to be sure that what we are angry about, and more importantly, who we are channeling that anger towards, is true. Think Cookie Monster over here. Remember how last week I talked about the chasm between Americans being one that's largely fabricated and manipulated into existence by lies and misdirection? That's why I loved that story from this morning. It's another way to illustrate how that happens. How many times have you found yourself all wound up at someone for something that you just misunderstood or isn't even real? How many times have you found yourself righteously indignant in one moment and then chagrined and apologetic in the next? We need to save ourselves and stop participating in anything that is contrary to that. There has to be a better way. There has to be a different path. And maybe, just maybe, it's already beginning to happen. I shared this little piece with our Vespers group on Tuesday evening, and I want to share it with you now. It's written by a woman named Sarah Zula, who's just an average person doing her work in the world, but she seems to think that we're on our way to something good. She says, "There's a massive change for the better happening on the planet right now. And this change won't be on the news, and it hasn't gone viral. And if you don't look for it, you won't even notice that it's happening." I think you'll notice. "This change is quietly happening in the hearts of humanity. People are realizing that we become what we focus our attention on, and we influence this reality based on who we become. So people are realizing that fighting is senseless and focusing on chaos is futile. Rather, people are quietly focusing on creating their version of heaven on earth. They are healing themselves and focusing on creating more beauty. People have realized that awakening to their own divinity is what protects them from manipulation and allows them to become the change that they want to see. It's sweeping through nations, but it's hard to notice. However, its strength is growing in numbers, not strength in numbers to fight. Fighting only breeds more fighting. It's strength in numbers to create such a beautiful world that it will someday be obvious for others to join, to the point where one day they will hold a war and no one will show up." "The frequencies of war, greed, and manipulation will no longer be able to exist in a reality full of sovereign, awakened beings living connected to their divinity." Holy cow. May it be so. This shift is what is happening and what is talked about in many, many circles right now. The shift from the masculine-dominated energy leading society to a feminine energy moving into the forefront. And this has nothing to do with the binary of man or woman in terms of gender. It's a shift in the type of energy that's prioritized and nurtured and guiding humanity forward. We hear it talked about all the time from authors and poets and activists and some politicians even. Sherry Mitchell, Valerie Valerie Kaur, Andrea Gibson come directly to my mind. And there are countless male-identified public faces who also prioritize this kind of energy and decision-making. And I just want to lift up the men of this church. The men who meet twice a month and talk together, allow deep things to happen between them, who are committed to love in the world. The men in my colleague group who were able to cry on Wednesday and hug each other without any shame or self-consciousness. It can be seen in many of the people who choose to define themselves as neither one nor the other and embrace the both and the and-ness of it all in the way they claim and name themselves. It is good and right to seek a different path, to look for ways forward that we've never fully embraced or known before. And that's what I feel called by love to do in these times. And I wonder what it would look like to let go of what we think we know and embrace the opportunity to course correct, to move off the well-worn path of destruction and into the mossy, thicketed trails of the unknown. We need to recalculate. And so I end this morning with a poem by Carrie Newcomer, who's a poet and songwriter out of Wisconsin. She wrote this piece on November 9th. It is called Recalculating, Recalibrating. I had an early GPS unit. I called her Jane. She had a BBC British accent. She sounded book savvy and tapped in. She sounded like she knew what was going on in the bigger picture and how it was intimately connected to all the smaller roads. When I missed a turn or got turned around, she would politely call out from within her electronic box set up on the dashboard, "Recalculating, recalculating." I appreciated her calm and generally genteel attitude. It always felt like encouragement. "Honey, there's nothing to fear. These things are going to happen. And eventually we're going to get there just a little later than you planned." Recalculating, recalibrating. "Honey, it's all right. It's all right to pull out a paper map if you need to, because sometimes you just have to place your finger directly on the name of the place that you most want to go. Sometimes you need to pull over the car and get out of the mindless stream of traffic, check the side mirrors, and get a bead on true north, or due west, or back east, or basically south. It's all right to consider your options while the overworked engine hisses and ticks and cools a little. Recalibrating, recalculating." Now, Jane only actually knew what she was programmed to know. But I appreciated her manner of dealing with the mistake, the mishap, or the unexpected. This is when we pay attention. In those vulnerable moments when we missed the exit or missed judged timing or lost our bearings, this is unknown territory, but it's not without direction. There are still on-ramps and off-ramps, intersections and U-turns. There are still landmarks, even when there are no signs. There is still reliable inner guidance, and there is still a way. Recalculating. Recalibrating. May we together begin a fruitful and loving journey. May we be willing to change course when needed and to never stop moving. Amen.